Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you're at in the time zone frame. Welcome to Roadmap for Seekers. I have Patricia Evelton with me today. She is an amazing writer and has an immense amount of knowledge in all areas of the paranormal, from Bigfoot to UFOs, cryptozoology, telepathy, ESP, faith healing, clairvoyance, and a great love for fantasy and mysteries. Mixing the paranormal with imagination, mystery, adventure, and suspense enables her to bring characters to life through her own personal experiences. She's been writing for 25 years and has created stories in her mind from the time she was a small child. She began her career in romance, then changed to young adult when her son-in-law, Jake, needed a double lung transplant. And that's when she started coming up with the PK and Me to raise money for them and for this double lung transplant. And with that, I'm going to bring her in so she can tell us all about how she's gone from romance to mystery and paranormal. Hello, Patricia.
Hello. Hi.
Yes. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. It sounds like you have an amazing story to tell us. And if you could just start with giving the listeners a little history as to yourself and in regards to Jake ever getting his lung transplant, and how is he today?
Yeah, it's been a long road. Jake, my son-in-law Jake, and he was born with cystic fibrosis, and and his brother actually has it too. And let me tell you, his parents are probably the two strongest people I've ever met to go through what they have with these two boys is amazing, because his brother will probably have to have this lung transplant too eventually. And how we went about even writing this book was when Jake got into his 20s, my daughter and him got married, and a year after they were married, the doctors told Jake he was going to have this lung transplant, and they put him on the list for, you know, and of course, when you're first put on the list, you're not very high up on the list, and it's really weird how they work the transplants, because you don't get moved up to the list until you're about ready to die.
Exactly.
It's so weird how they do that. But so he was on the list, and we thought, wow, we're going to have to start doing fundraising for this. We knew the operation was going to be a lot. We had no idea it would be $1.2 million. And we're just average families. We're, you know, we didn't have that kind of money at all. And so we started thinking of all these different fundraising ideas. And one of them, you know, my daughter and I both write. And I'd been writing for, you know, 20 years. And I said to Mary, I said, well, why don't we collaborate on a book? And at the time, you know, ebooks were coming out, and I said, we could self-publish this. And, you know, erroneously, I thought we would make tons of money to really help his cause, and that just didn't manifest. But, you know, the thought was there that we could raise a lot of money doing this. And so we sat down, and my daughter and I were just huge Jim Butcher fans, and we loved the Dresden Files and had read every book that he had put out. And so we started thinking, wow, wouldn't it be really neat to have a young adult, you know, a teen Dresden? And that's actually how our book, David Finkelman, you know, came to be. But then we started thinking, well, let's start making this our own book. And my daughter and I love mythology, so we started putting mythology in it. She's a huge sci-fi fan, so we put a little bit of sci-fi in it. And we just started making the book our own. And that's how we came up with, you know, David Finkelman and Dangerous Magic. So it's a combination of, you know, it's paranormal, which comes from my experiences, because I grew up with that. And then it has fantasy, a little bit of sci-fi, and mythology. So it's a, you know, that's a combination of all of that. And so we started, you know, brainstorming and came up with that story idea. And we enjoyed doing it so much, we just continued with the series. And that was just one of 12 fundraisers that we did that year. Then what happened is, I think it was in January, Jake ended up getting the swine flu that when it was just going crazy. I'm in Washington State, and it was just, you know, it was so everywhere around here, and he ended up getting it. And that's when he went into really serious condition and went soup downhill, and he got moved up to the top of the list. And it was such a roller coaster ride because, you know, a lung would come in and we would all get excited, go up to the hospital and think this was it, but then the lungs didn't fit him. And they have to fit perfectly because there cannot be no gap in there. If there's a gap in there, bacteria can form, and that will kill the person. And so it has to fit perfectly. And several times lungs came in, they didn't fit. And then, you know, not only is his hopes dashed, but the whole family, you know. And it's not like they come in all the time. And it's, you know, you just feel like that was it. That was the last hope. And you just pray and pray and pray, you know, that something will happen. And so what happened is he was in the hospital, and actually none of us knew this, but he was in the hospital and the doctor had come in the night before and said, well, Jake, doesn't look like this is going to happen for you. We're going to release you the next day. I suggest you go home, write your will, tell everybody you love goodbye, and you'll have about 3 days to live. And and he didn't even tell my daughter. And she was working. She's a school teacher, and she was working at the time when he was up at the hospital. And I think his mother was there with him. And so he pretty much accepted that. And then I think it was like 2 a.m, he got a phone call from his doctor. And he said, well, you're not going to believe this, but a set of lungs have come in, and I think they're going to fit you. And then, I mean, it was just like this miracle. I mean, here they were releasing him just a few hours later to send him home to die. And that morning they came in, they measured him, and it was going to fit. And I just, even now, I just can't believe this happened. It, within, you know, a couple hours, it was a miracle. And, you know, and what was even more a miracle is we had so many people from all over the world praying for Jake. And I really do attribute this to his living and surviving because we had people from every religion praying for him, and it was so wonderful. I mean, from people in Jerusalem we didn't even know praying at the wall to Wiccans. You know, every religion you can imagine, and word just spread, and it was just incredible to have everybody come together like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's so a miracle in itself, you know, that people could come together like that and pray for this person they didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was masses that they said and prayed in his name, and it was just incredible. So, but it, there's so much that goes into these transplants that people don't realize. They,
mm-hmm.
It goes on for a long time, and boy, I tell you, going through that and just the surgery alone and wondering if he'll survive the surgery and the experience that my daughter and Jake went through after recovery, you know, he was in the recovery room afterwards and they were laying next to a guy who had a heart transplant. And I don't know if this came from the same donor or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a young man about the same age as Jake. And they just had a curtain between them. And the young man, all of a sudden, they heard, you know, he didn't survive. And
mm-hmm.
you heard the red line and
yeah,
the parents and family just bursting out crying. And my daughter sat with her husband and her parents and they started crying for the family and wondering, would Jake be next?
Right.
You know, these kind of experiences just impact you so much. And that's what happens when you go through these kind of things. So there's wonderful things that happen because, like, my mother or my daughter's mother-in-law, she's a medic. And so the
mm-hmm.
whole fire department in this area came together and started fundraising for Jake and helped tremendously. So that was a super positive. And then you have these other experiences when you go through this of that are very traumatic. And
yeah.
And then you also have the guilt, too, of
mm-hmm.
the donor and their family.
Mm-hmm.
And you are so grateful to that family.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you feel for them too, and
mm-hmm.
how they can donate their son's body like that right after they lost him is
mm-hmm.
the most compassionate thing. I can't imagine it. And, you know, they saved so many lives doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But can you imagine that? Can you imagine losing your child and then you have to, within minutes, say, yes, I will donate his body.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't imagine doing that.
It's very difficult, you know, but if they've talked about it, hopefully, before the person passes, you know, it's more clear to them that they are doing what their child wanted them to do. You know, but if not, I mean, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, even with instructions, it's really hard. You know, it's amazing how quickly teams come in and how important it is to, you know, save those organs right away or those eyes or, you know, however, you know, the person is donating. And, you know, and I understand the guilt and stuff. I have my ex-husband had a double lung transplant. Quite a few years ago. And, you know, it's always been, you know, you feel bad for the family and you feel bad for, I lost my train of thought. Let's go to the next question. I don't know what just happened.
Well, you feel bad for the family. You're so grateful to them at the same time, but you do feel that sense of guilt that or sorrow that they lost their, you know, their son was the same age as Jake, and
yeah.
So it's like, wow, they lost him at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
But he did save so many lives. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And you learn so much, too, with the transplant system. Like,
mm-hmm.
they have to take the heart first. And
right.
so we had to wait hours. I mean, Jake was supposed to have his surgery at 3 o'clock, and he didn't go in until really late. I think it was like 9 o'clock at night because they had to, you know, do the heart surgery first. And so there's a protocol to what they
mm-hmm.
do first. And, and you know, they do every part of the body. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, they even do the skin. You learn so
mm-hmm.
much. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So.
And it's amazing how people's lives are hinging on that, and how in some ways it's beautiful because the divine is like right there and knows, okay, this person needs that, you know, and whatever timing it was for that person. In a lot of ways, you know, now he's still living in spirit in a lot of different people, you know, and
yeah.
on their bodies and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that type of stuff where they just go, oh my gosh, this is so amazing that. And you can feel their energy, you know.
Well, yeah, and I don't know, did your husband pick up different habits? Because I know Jake.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny with Jake because he actually did, like, certain different kinds of, I think it was food, and did pick up different habits. It was strange, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, wow, you didn't do that before, or you didn't want to do that before or something, but it was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just so, the amount of gratitude that you have, it is so in-depth, and the level of surrender you've had to come to before you get that gratitude to surrender to the fact that you may not make it and that you are. This could be your last call, so, you know, I mean, it's about putting your right
yeah.
foot forward and doing the next right thing, and I think, you know, it's amazing how people can do that and then come out of that with so much gratitude and so much love for life after experiencing that near-death experience.
Yes, yes. And, you know, one of my biggest frustrations is that they didn't want us to contact them. They didn't want
yeah.
us to meet them, and I still want to meet them. I still want to just hug them
mm-hmm.
and thank them profusely, and
mm-hmm.
all I could do is thank them in my book, and I don't even know their name.
Right.
But, you know.
I do a project called Shawls of Love and Hugs where, you know, in different situations, if it's a newborn baby or if it's, you know, a mother or someone with cancer or a family who's losing someone, where they can feel the hugs of the people that have infused those shawls that I get and I send out to different cancer units and infusion units and transplant units. And, you know, they can feel those hugs when there's no one else there, you know, or when, you know, the person has passed and you can still feel them in a, you know, amazing way of just being held and being relaxed in the moment.
Oh, that is so wonderful. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to tell my daughters both knit and crochet.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I
yeah.
could do that, but I'm going to tell them that because, boy, they whip those things out and they're really
yeah.
well made.
Yeah, and I have a Facebook page. It's called Shawls of Love and Hugs, and it's about, you know, the process that I got a shawl when my back was broken and I was going through tremendous heart surgeries in the last 2 years. And then all of a sudden, Spirit met me, and I'm doing better than I've done in years. And, you know, it was one of those things where I need to pass this around because friends had given me a shawl that was 60 years old that had never been worn. And it had been made by Indigenous people. There was a lot of love and prayers and everything put into it. And it was amazing to feel that, you know, support when I was there in the room by myself or, you know, that type of thing. And I've used shells before that when my dad was passing, you know, and then I pass them on to someone whose parent has passed, you know, or, you know, just doing it so and giving it in that compassionate way, you know, and, you know, just start it wherever you're at. I mean, because bottom line is they help so many people, not just the person, but also the staff, and they're amazed at how it calms people. And if we have any callers that want to call in, you can call in at 1-347-838-9142. Press 1 once, and we will see you in the queue. And, Patricia, can you tell me, you know, I guess how that, I mean, I know that it's changed you a lot, but how has it affected you with your writing and, you know, I just, you know, when did you first begin to dabble with a paranormal versus romance, I guess, is part of the biggest question.
Well, you know, someone asked me just recently, did you start writing the paranormal for the escape from this trauma?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pause and think about that. Because
mm-hmm.
we could have written romance. We could have written
mm-hmm.
anything. And I had to say, yeah, that's probably why we did pick the
mm-hmm.
fantasy and for both of us, you know, both for my daughter and I, because we could create a world and with, you know, both of us felt so helpless. We couldn't do anything for Jake to cure him. We couldn't help
right.
him. And it was such a helpless feeling. And I think that when he asked me that, it was like I had never thought of that before. But he had hit the nail on the head. I
yeah.
think he was completely right. I could create a fantasy world, and my character had magic that could make things happen
mm-hmm.
where I couldn't, and it empowered me as a writer, and I think that's why both of us, not even knowingly, did that, and so you know, that's probably why we did write in that genre,
mm-hmm. and it's such a beautiful genre because, and it helps children believe in a higher being or a higher good, you know, through magic, but
yeah.
it's also about the magic of miracles, because miracles happen like magic, you know, they're not a, what would I call it, you know, because you go through such a transition that during that time when your miracle's happening, that you, and you look back and you just go, I definitely was carried by other people's prayers, you know,
yes.
rather than
yes.
than my own, you know, or my family's own. I mean, like, it's a huge circle around the world, you know, making things happen. And I, like you, have had the experience of being prayed for during that time around the world, you know, and it totally lifts that heavy, heavy burden you carry, you know, when you're not in that transition. You know, it's just so much amazing energy that you work with. So it's got to really have a lot to do with, you know, do you believe in ghosts, you know, and do you believe in spirits that come and try to warn us of things?
I'm so glad you said that, because I try to do that. I mean, to me, it's when I write the fantasy, a lot of people think it's like evil or whatever, but to me, I feel like it's more spiritual, and I really do, and I try to put more of a spiritual sense to my books, and
mm-hmm.
I put, like in the second David book, there's true experiences that go in that book, and one of them was taken from my daughter's experience,
mm-hmm.
And it's not paranormal or anything. This was actual experience for her, where my character David learns that kids that he went to school with are living on the street. And he never knew that. He eats lunch with them every day, and he learns through a different source that these kids are living on the street. And he's absolutely shocked. And he helps them, of course, through his magic. But that's an actual true story that happened to my daughter. And, of course, we helped them by donating to a place here in Olympia called Rosie's Place. And that's a center where the kids go. And they don't get to sleep there. However, they do get resources as far as, like, tarps that keep them warm when they have to sleep on the street. And it keeps them dry because it's so darn wet here. They get clothes, socks. They'll give them money. They'll get toiletries, that kind of thing. So, and they do get food. So they do feed them. But, yeah, that was really shocking. And, you know, so, and we, my daughter, in fact, for a senior project, collected socks. She collected clean new socks and donated them all to Rosie's Place. And, you know, and she didn't say, oh, this is for the kids that are homeless at school. She just did it.
Right.
Because
the passion that she has goes into those socks, and they can feel it. You know, I mean, that's what I'm finding is that when you donate stuff to certain causes and you really have a really good feeling about it and what you're doing and you're really concerned, you know, then all that goes into those garments and, you know, they feel more safe and they feel, you know, a lot more accepted than what they were before, you know, because they have something that's giving them some confidence and some and a feeling that people do care.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of these kids, they were kicked out of their homes. And it for stupid reasons. You know, I mean, I just can't even imagine kicking my child out of my home at like 16 years old. It's like, what are you thinking? But there's parents that do that. So, you know, these kids are wandering the streets. But I really think it's amazing that they will stay in school and get their education. And they were showering at the schools. They would come to the high school early and go in the locker room and shower. And and I think the principal knew about it, but I tell you, Olympia High School has the most awesome principal in the world. His name is Mr. Grant, and he should be nominated for Principal of the Year for the country. He does, like, diversity seminars for the high school, and not just for different, like, different races, but like different for different, like, gays or if you have a learning disability or and different races. But he tries so hard to get the unity in the school. It's just amazing the length this principal goes to help his students. It really is. And most of it comes out of his own pocket. Just amazing what he does. Goes way beyond the call of duty, that's for sure.
Right. Let's see. So you do believe in ghosts then, am I correct?
Oh, yeah. I've had too many experiences not to believe in them now. You know, way too many.
Do they have a message for us, those that are earthbound?
You know, I think there's different reasons. I think there's residual energy that will repeat itself down here. But I also think that there are ghosts that that are stuck down here. And
I
think some are temporarily stuck, and then I think some are just permanently stuck. And like for example, about, is it a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I had a neighbor that committed suicide. And he was a Vietnam vet, and he, we live really close to an airport here in Olympia, and they fly, they have a helicopter training program, and they fly helicopters, and they're not supposed to fly them over our house, but they do, and they fly treetop level. Well, that was causing flashbacks for him, and he kept calling the airport, telling them, and they kept saying, oh, they're not flying over your house, but they were. And I tell you, one time I was out in my garden, and it flew so low, it totally freaked me out. It vibrated my house. It vibrated my body. It was so low. So I could see why he would be having flashbacks. And he was, I believe he was in the helicopter in the back when he was flying in Vietnam, which was why this was so disturbing to him. And eventually it just triggered it. And so shortly, just days after this happened, I was sitting in my living room, and I have two huge windows in facing the street, and I was working on my computer, and lo and behold, my neighbor walks right in front of my window to my front door. And at first it didn't dawn on me that he had passed away, you know. And I saw him walk to the front door. So I started to the front door, and beside my front door I have two windows. So I saw him standing there. Well, it was when I reached for the front door I realized, wait a minute, Ray's dead. You know, and I started, that's when I started getting like chills and shaking. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, and I opened the front door and he was gone. And so I shut the door and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm just shaking. And I go back and I sit on the couch and I'm going, okay, I'm not going to tell anybody about this, you know, in my house. I think I'll keep this to myself. Because, you know, after these things happen, you think, okay, did I really see that? You know, and I kept going through in my head, well, no, I saw that. I saw that person because he looked as solid as a person, you know. But you still question yourself. You still think, you know, you still question your mind. And and then it was like 2 days later, it was 1 or 2 days later, my husband and I had gone out. And then at the time, my daughter was still living at home, and she was going to school still. And I came home, and she was, like, flipping out, and she had been playing video games at the TV and facing the window. And she pulls me aside, and I said, what's going on? She goes, Mom, you're not going to believe this, but I was sitting here, and Ray walked by our window to our front door. And I just got chills. I mean, chills from head to toe. And then I told her about my experience, too. And but she goes, Mom, you can't leave me home alone again. Well, he never did, because we had several experiences with him showing up at our window again. But we started talking about, okay, what does he want, you know? And I didn't know, we never really figured that out. And, you know, I know he didn't just appear to us, because his wife had a Native American shaman come to her house and did a ceremony inside and outside the house. Because he committed suicide on their patio, which I can see very clearly from our house, our front window. And then, I think it was just a few months later, she moved. She sold the house and moved very far away.
Yeah.
So I don't think she ever could get rid of him. But after she moved, it was interesting, because after she moved, he stopped showing up.
That's interesting.
At least, yeah.
It?
Yeah, he stopped showing up here. So, yeah.
So something happened there.
Yeah.
So, can you tell our listeners what happens when you die?
Well, I think this is what I believe. I believe that we transition to another plane. I think that, you know, I know there's some people out there that think that we don't exist anymore, but I believe that we do live on. I don't think that we go to the pearly gates of heaven. I think that there are several planes that we go to, and that I believe in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
That we have, you know, continue to come down here till we learn the lessons that we have to learn to improve ourselves spiritually. I think it's impossible to reach perfection in one life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would all be archangels, you know, or you know, one of the masters that walk the earth, like Jesus or Buddha, or you know, these perfect people that were down here and tried to guide us. If you know, we could do it in one life, but us, you know, the ones that are down here, we are not that perfect. And so
no,
I think
we're not.
It takes several tries.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that, and I mean, I think we have many lifetimes in one lifetime, or it seems that way to me, where, you know, I was one way, you know, 30 years ago, and it doesn't even match what I am now, you know, and I think we...
Yes.
Well, I have had near-death experiences, quite a few of them, and my friends say that I reincarnate myself, and I'm different each time I come back, that I'm a little more closer to the divine, or I'm a little more grounded to the earth, or, you know, and it's like, I said, it's just like being stretched, you know, and having that knowledge of what it is to be going to the other side and then come back, you know, and be told that you're not done yet, you know? And it's like, okay,
yeah.
Well, then help me with this body, because you must think I have a lot to do, and you're going to have to help me with what's going on. And that's what's happened this last year is, and I think a lot of it has to do with that I've worked with so many different shamans and healers and people from universal consciousness and, you know, and the prayers that went worldwide, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm able to walk again, and it's like, okay, you must think that I can handle this, so let's get on with it, you know?
Don't you feel, though, that when you have that near death and you come back, that it must be because you have a message to share with the world?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, is that my work's not done yet here, you know, and I'm getting, you know, back into doing the essential oils that are therapeutic, they're infused with gems and divine light and the angels, and I blend them all on a vortex where I live, and the energy from them are a lot different than from other companies, and, you know, I've had a lot of, because that's what I cross people over with, is with two oils that I make, and then feathers that I've learned to put together to help them cross, and the birds that are involved with them.
Oh, that's neat. That's really cool.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, it's kind of on the same thing. You know, my family was like, wow, we don't know what happened to you, but you're really getting strange. And then, you know, it was time for my dad to pass, and he called me, and he said, come do what you do. He goes, I don't want to linger. And I said, okay, you know. And he was gone 3 days after I got home. But,
wow.
You know, he's still on the other side and meets me regularly. You know, and that's how I got started in radio, was due to my dad hearing my first interview that I'd ever done on April 29th of 2013. And so it's just been a really interesting thing. And then back to your question, you know, your experiences, what are your thoughts on cryptids?
On cryptids?
Uh-huh.
I think they exist. You know, all cryptids are unknown creatures, you know, and they're unknown creatures are found every day all over the world, you know, and so, creatures like Bigfoot, you know, they've been seen. I always think, how can people still deny Bigfoot doesn't exist when there's been sightings all over the world by millions of people now? And so, yet there's still skeptics out there. And they even have hair and DNA of Bigfoot. So I just don't understand why people still are so skeptical. Just because one hasn't been captured, it just means that they're very, good at their environment. You know, they're very intelligent. I don't know whether to call them animals or not, because they said that the DNA difference between man and Bigfoot is only like one strand. So, you know, I don't know where to exactly put them between ape and man. They're like just a link difference. So, but they're highly intelligent. So, you know, they're capable of, you know, hiding in their environment and keeping away from man. And and they haven't really hurt people.
You know,
you don't hear of attacks. I think they just want to be left alone. So
yeah, and just be who they are in their environment, and that everybody doesn't need to be moving in on them, you know, because it's no different than, you know, how we've, you know, pretty much almost wiped out the buffalo or different animals due to people getting too close, too mysterious, wanting, you know, whatever medicine they're carrying or whatever. And it's like, no, you can't continue to do that. You've got to, you know, let them have their peace, you know, and they don't really come into our environment and cause problems.
Exactly. And how many animals have we misplaced or because we wanted a really nice house on the water or a development, you know, that's happened recently here in Eastern Washington. They put a huge development in Cle Elum, and now the people are complaining because the elk lived there for probably thousands of years. And now the people want to kill the herds of elk because it's a super rich development they put in there. And it's like, well, what did you expect? You know, that's where the elk have lived for thousands of years.
Exactly.
So, but I was going to say, just recently in the California fires, they had a medic worked on a Bigfoot. It got burned in the fire, and they had to medevac it out. And they wouldn't say where they medevaced it out or where they took it even. But the medic that worked on it, she admitted that she worked on a Bigfoot and gave it first aid and took care of it. So
yeah, really amazing how that all works, and you just go, wow, this is such an amazing way of seeing things, you know, because not everybody sees, you know, the paranormal or the other side. You know, they just see parts of it or pieces of it or, you know, and then they question themselves because, you know, they're told by society, well, that doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really exist, but yet you wouldn't have had the experience if it didn't really exist.
Don't you think when people are really close-minded, it's due to fear? I think fear stops them from believing, or even not believing, but being open to the possibility.
Yeah.
You know.
Very
just
much
like
so.
when you're talking about the other side and near death and your near-death experience, so many people are so afraid of dying because they don't know where they're going to go. They don't know what's on the other side. And if they, maybe that's your message, is that there is another, and it's wonderful and it's beautiful and it's,
And it meets you right wherever you're at. It's like this big jewel that there's all these different facets to the divine and to the, all these different forms of spirituality. And no one is better than another, and they're very equal. But when they come together, they really manifest well. And once we're on the other side, that's what it is. It's not separation and, well, the Muslims are over here and the Hindus are over here and the Christians are there. It's like you're all mingled, and everybody has the same knowledge then of the divine, and that it is a divine presence, and it does work in a whole different way.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's the message we're getting, because there's more and more people who are going to the other side and experiencing it, you know, and coming back. And I think that it is a lot of the message, because people need to understand that it's not something to be afraid of, you know, that it's an amazing experience, and that you, it's not, and your soul, which is your whole being, the parts that's in your heart that God said will hide man's spirit and connection to us in his heart. And it takes a lot of people a long time to get to that peace, you know.
Yeah.
And once you do, though, then you realize it's not about separation. It's about what, you know, what I've done is taken bits and pieces of different people's types of spirituality and made it into my own, you know. And that's what the higher power is really about. It's about being, you know, doing our own thing, you know, doing
that's
it individually.
That's what I've done too. Exactly.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
Yeah.
And I think until you do that, you don't feel at peace. You don't,
right.
Because it's like something's missing until you do that.
And you're searching for that missing piece.
Yes.
And the missing piece is within. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I'm sure your son-in-law could tell us about that. You know, I'm sure he's had his moments of, OMG, I'm really out here, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also about, you know, that security of knowing it isn't bad on the other side. And, you know, and I'm kind of one of those that's a believer in hell isn't somewhere you go, it's where we're at, and that you have to change it. You know, I mean, it's difficult being on the earth without a spiritual background or having some type of spiritual way to attach yourself to the divine so you don't get sucked into so many different otherworldly things.
Yes. Oh, that's so well put. Wow. That is so well put. And, you know, I think of that all the time. I think when I hear of people that are, especially like atheists, I think, wow, there's no way that you could be grounded because you've got to be connected. You've got to, how do you stay on the right path? I mean.
Right. Or any path. That's the part that gets me. It's like, and in this life, it's about that we come to this earth the way we're supposed to have whatever experience it is and to share whatever knowledge. And what I've noticed in the last good 3 years, probably almost 10, that we've seen a lot of changes where, you know, different spiritual entities that had been so silent for so long are really sharing their information and allowing it to come out and to blend it with other people's spirituality. You know, it's like Black Elk talks about the rainbow bridge, and you know, that's where we're at. We're learning to blend together and meld together where there's no defining, you know, line between the colors, but it's all blended
right.
together, you know.
Right.
And we each help the other one be picturesque, you know, or colorful, you know, in our own way.
Right.
We each bring our own thread to the tapestry, you know. We don't know how we're going to get used in the tapestry, but we know that we're going to be, you know, in something, because you can't be on this earth and not affect things, you know, one way or the other.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes I think, well, it comes down to as simple as love, you know,
mm-hmm.
just loving. But yet, how do you stay in that? Well, you have to be connected, like you said, to the divine
mm-hmm.
in order to stay in that. And that's the challenge. You know,
yeah.
you can love everything, but then when you're challenged by everyday life, you know, 'cause
mm-hmm.
it's so busy, and you have other people affecting you and that. And it's hard. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order to get back on, and you know, you get off track. Everybody does. You get angry. You
mm-hmm.
you know, you get affected. excuse me, by other things. But to get back on track, like you said, you have to be connected. You have to. And
yeah, and
go ahead. Oh, and
well,
and
I was
going to
say, I've just really noticed the difference between being in town or a city with a lot of lights and stuff, and then being rural where I am now, where there is no street lights, stop lights, nothing, you know, other than stop signs. And the energy is totally different.
Yeah. It makes a huge difference connecting with nature.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I, we own a land surveying business, and so
mm-hmm.
we are out in the woods a lot, and
mm-hmm.
I tell you, it just energizes you. And when we're not, when we end up having to do a lot of construction work, I just go for walks out in the
mm-hmm.
woods. I have to. Or I get in my garden and just touch nature,
mm-hmm.
because it grounds you, it energizes you.
Mm-hmm. So, listeners, if you want to re-listen to this show after we finish today in 5 minutes, you can go to the archives about 10 minutes after the hour, and it'll be in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/Renford. You can reach me at searchersroadmap@gmail.com. And, Patricia, can you tell them what your contact information is?
Sure. You could go to my website. It's pkburian. It's pkburian.com, and all my books will be on that. Or if you want to send me an email, that is just the opposite. It's burian, burianpk@gmail.com. So, and my books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Lulu, it's Oyster Books, and they're listed on my website too, and you
mm-hmm.
just have to press a button to go to those places, so if you're interested in buying any of them, so.
And they're a really good series for young people to be able to get in touch with their mysterious side and their magical side, you know, because I believe that we all have different, you know, powers that we can use to be able to, you know, interact on this planet without as much strife and lack of, you know, that comes so much from a lot of different things that's done on iPads and that type of stuff, where it pulls you more into the electronics versus into being into the nature and experiencing what it's like to put your feet on the grass and in the dirt and walking in the trees. You know, I mean, I think it just is amazing how you put it into writing, you know, and you have them have that experience and they learn to use their imagination.
Yeah. Well, and I have other things out there besides just the fantasy book. I have a mystery book and coloring books and a couple of picture books, too. So something for all ages.
Well, that's great.
So.
Yeah, because you published 29 books, so there's a few of them out there. Just do P.K. Buren and Google it, and you'll see everything that she does and has done, what she's working on. And you do have a Facebook page, right?
Yes, I have a Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest. And I have Pinterest under P.K. Buren and my real name, Azel Pine. Not any easier to spell, but... So.
Well, as we're closing here, what would you like to finish with today? And we're definitely going to have to bring you back to have a bigger discussion on Bigfoot and all the other mysterious things that you've, and paranormal things that you've experienced. How would you like to end the show today?
I would like to end it by telling people that... and this is based on our experience with Jake, that just remember that the obstacles that you go through in life, they will make you a stronger person. And I have learned to look at obstacles as actually a blessing. So they're hard when you go through them, they are, but they will make you a stronger and better person.
Yeah, and I think it makes you a little more balanced.
Yeah.
Because it's like learning how to ride a wave and not fighting the wave. And when you start floating with it and doing the ups and downs, then all of a sudden you're like, wow, this really is happening. And this is amazing, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have just a few seconds left. Thank you so much, Patricia, for today and coming on the show. And I'll definitely be having you back in the near future. Tomorrow I have Peter the Healer from Canada. He'll be taking calls and doing healings over the air. So please call in at 1-347-838-9142. And for all the listeners, you know, all of this is archived. You can, and it works anytime you need it. I've been doing the show since April of, no, I don't remember when I started. Anyways, if you Google my name, Rhonda Harrison, it'll bring up all my radio links. I can see it. Oh, it's February 21st, 2014 with Pam Rennie. And that one's a wonderful one if you want to learn how to set energy and use the vibration of the rose, because I think that really helps a lot of people in this time of chaoticness. So with that, we'll say bid you adieu. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, and then we'll see you next week. And it's always amazing what comes up when we're doing the show. So everyone have a wonderful day. Thanks, Pat.
Well, thank you so much, Rhonda. This was fun.
You're very welcome. We'll have to talk again.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Kill those two. I don't know. Careful.